Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Israelites patron the United States finally have their war on Iran. A decades-long project in the making is now in play. The Trump administration rhetorically has played with the idea of multipolarity, but the real aim is the maintenance of hegemony. In this sense, the Ukraine conflict and the war on Iran are different parts of the same agenda. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He is an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with Mark. Well, this has been in the making for a very long time. Most of our adult lives, we've been waiting for this moment. Certainly, Benjamin Netanyahu has been waiting for this moment for decades. But as I said in my introduction, there are a lot of interconnecting dots here. I mentioned the Ukraine conflict. Put some flesh on those bones, because this is something that the U.S. empire, for the lack of other or another term, just simply cannot tolerate countries that have deterrence. We're seeing this being played out now.
Yeah, so the ostensible reason for this unprovoked, full-scale Israeli attack on Iran is Iran's civilian nuclear energy program, despite the fact that both United States intelligence and the International Atomic Energy agencies tell us that Iran does not have a nuclear weapons program. They enrich uranium, as they're entitled to under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, as part of their civilian nuclear program. But even having that enriched uranium is viewed as a threat. But I believe that the real goal here is regime change. This is what Israel is affecting. Now, they are counting on the fact that they will be able to, quote unquote, drag the U.S. into this conflict, because they will not be able to sustain a long-range strike war, much less regime change Iran, without United States assistance. And I hate using that euphemism, the U.S. being dragged into a conflict. The U.S. is never dragged into a conflict. The U.S. drags conflicts around on chains behind it as some kind of unleashed behemoth. But we see this with the decapitation strikes that occurred at the IRGC leadership, civilian nuclear scientists, and attempts on political lives. The supreme leader of Iran, the Ayatollah Khamenei, his residence was targeted. His neighborhood was bombed extensively. So this is the goal. And Netanyahu has kind of inanely and insanely been calling on Iranians who are falling under Israeli bombs and children being picked up out of the rubble to rise up and overthrow their government. And that is part, as you pointed out, of a larger geopolitical order shaping, much like Ukraine. Ukraine is used against Russia as Israel is being used against Iran. It is a proxy conflict. Russia will be supporting Iran, and the U.S. will be supporting Israel.
Well, that's very much the point, George, because this is the Israel's attack war on Iran. And George, Mark has already pointed out, but it seems almost inevitable the U.S. will be involved in it. But this is a very strong message, if not a threat, to Russia and China, the other countries that have deterrence.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, at the same time, it's hard to see, and it has always been hard to see, in what way Israel in any way helps any U.S. geopolitical agenda. When it comes to the Middle East, Israel has actually been an albatross around the America's neck, because it has prevented very normal, healthy relations with most of the Arab world. Israel is a real headache for the United States. For the United States, essentially, to continue to support all of Israel's wars, whether it's in Lebanon, whether it's in Syria, whether it's against Egypt back in the day, against the Palestinians, all of that has actually harmed the United States. It hasn't helped it. And I think it's a little different in the case of Russia, because in Russia, that is about NATO expansion. And that's something that is America is involved in trying to exert its hegemony over the entire European continent and ultimately the entire Eurasian continent. So, I mean, obviously, you know, I don't approve of that, but at least it has a logic to it. There's a logic to it. The support for Israel has no logic to it. This is a...
It's an
emotional attachment going back a number of years, and it has hurt the United States over and over again.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're looking at what's going on now, and I want to talk about, there's going to be a final resolution to this. I don't think there's going to be any halfway measures. I don't think there's going to be a ceasefire or anything. This is going to play out. But Mark, I mean, if you look at, Egypt was derailed. Syria has been destroyed. Lebanon has been crippled. Iraq, we had regime change there. I mean, things are in train. That's the whole point of my thesis here, is that countries that have deterrence will be targeted and destroyed. And destroying Iran, which remains to be seen, they have deterrence. And this is a reminder to the Russians and the Chinese what can happen to you when you resist.
Yeah, I mean, not only is it a deterrent value, but it is also cementing regional control over the Middle East, which is still pivotal in the geopolitical sphere. China relies a great deal, a significant part of its energy mixture, gas and oil, comes from Iran. And the U.S. isn't interested in normal relations with countries in the Middle East. The U.S. goal in the Middle East is crude, brutal hegemony and dominion. And Israel has always been an instrumental part of the U.S. hegemony in the Middle East. Now, they seem to have lost the other leg. It used to be a tripod of the United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. But Saudi Arabia's maturing multi-vector foreign policy. Saudi Arabia is actually condemning the Israeli attacks in fairly strong terms. They're not having anything to do with this. But Joe Biden famously said that if Israel didn't exist, the United States would have to create it. The U.S. political elite, it's not simply a matter of campaign finance funds and IPAC. They are ideologically, and in certain cases, even a twisted religious perversion of Christian Zionism, the views of the apocalypse and so on, in the support of Israel. It is an article of faith. So it has both ideological and geopolitical components. Yes, it worsens U.S. relations with the Arab states of the Middle East to a certain degree, but they always count power. That they can simply demonstrate power like this and states will fall in line. The problem with that is Russia shows how resistance is possible, provides inspiration. And Iran, if it survives, the government survives, and the primary goal of the Iranian government now must be survival, then they will also demonstrate that.
You know, George, in looking at the domestic front in the United States, there's quite a bit of an uproar about from the MAGA movement and how Trump has handled this. Because you and I talked about this earlier, is that, you know, the level of involvement, we learned mostly that from Israeli media. And now it's coming out, Axios and other news outlets. I mean, Trump looks very compromised here. And it seems like, and being so compromise, calling the attack, initial attack, excellent. And then with the New York Post saying he knew all about the attack. This man should not be saying these things, because not only is the world outraged again with Israeli impunity, but I mean, this is a betrayal of his own movement. And a lot of people are saying that out front, George.
Well, it very much is a betrayal. And that, I think, goes back to the issue of well, what does Israel actually do for the United States? Of course, it weakens the United States. It actually undermines the United States' position in the world. It impoverishes the United States. And if, what propelled Trump's rise within the Republican Party? It was undoubtedly those wars, the wars in Afghanistan, and especially the war in Iraq. And clearly the war in Iraq was in large part done at the instigation of Israel. There was nowhere any reason to indulge in that invasion of Iraq other than the pressure that was coming from Benjamin Netanyahu, who was using exactly the same arguments then against Iraq. Oh, the weapons of mass destruction, you know, Saddam Hussein is 15 minutes away from having the bomb and everything like that, the same hysteria. And it was Trump who actually finally took over the Republican Party and said, enough of the Bushes and the McCains. That propelled his rise, and he never looked back after that. So what he's done now is essentially gone back to the George W. Bush playbook. And he first of all, he did, you know, in these early months of his administration, it seemed, okay, we're moving towards a new chapter. You know, we're now engaged in serious negotiations.
And, so, you know, but George, that was all a fraud.
Well, I don't know if it was. I don't know that was a fraud. What we know.
We don't know that. But let's talk about what we do know. The speech, you know, about these neocons that know nothing about your country, and you have the assets and the resources to do. That's all in tatters right now.
It is in tatters, but that doesn't mean that it was fraud. I don't know that Trump really was really being insincere in all of that time. But there hasn't been any confirmation from any source other than Israel. Israel has its own interest in presenting, oh, it was all a fraud. We were in on it together. Israel is trying to get United States involved in a war with Iran. How is it doing it? It's telling the Iranians, you know, we and the Americans were in on it together, so please target the Americans. Don't just hit us. Target the Americans, because then the Americans are going to come in into this.
All right, let me go to Mark before we go to the break. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin under that sea of apologia and justifications, to be perfectly honest. The U.S. is involved in this war against Iran. U.S. Aircraft are refueling Israeli aircraft over the skies of Syria to sustain their intensity of long-range strikes. U.S. military and all Western military satellites are trained on Iran, providing real-time 24/7 satellite information to the Israelis. The U.S. is already providing new supplies of bunker busters and missiles, right? They're conducting air defense on Israel's behalf, shooting down drones and pilots. The U.S. is intimately involved in this conflict. This attack would not be possible without the U.S. active.
All right, Mark, hold that thought. I'll come back to you after the break. Gentlemen, I have to jump in. We're going to go to a break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on what is going on in the Middle East. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. I want to remind you, we're discussing some real news here. Mark, before we went to the break here, you were talking about U.S. involvement. Yes, that's I think, patently clear. But when are American jets and aircraft carriers and everything else going to be openly, overtly involved in this? Because that seems what the ruse is all about here. And again, you know, I want to throw it back to George after you answer, is that this is not what a lot of people voted for. Mark.
Okay, so first of all, U.S. military assets are, of course, already on the way into the theater. U.S. destroyers are moving in as we speak. The New York Times is already providing cover, saying that Israel can't do enough damage to Iran's deep nuclear facilities without active U.S. assistance, using the size and penetrative power of the bunker busters that the U.S. reserves for their own use.
So Israel starts a conflict it can't finish without help.
Yeah, Trump is already making comments that there can't. I'm all for peace, but there can't be peace in the Middle East if Iran has a nuclear weapon. He's already providing those leap hurdles. He's making increasingly unhinged and bloodthirsty, maniacal tweets threatening Iran. I told you you were going to get this. I said 60 days. It's 61 days.
And now you're dead.
You're going to get
now you're dead.
You're dead.
All right, hang on, guys. Hang on. Let me go to...
He's
go ahead,
talking
George.
About slaughter and...
Yeah. Go, and George, judging. Jump in. George.
Look, there's a more commonsensical view of this. Trump was involved. I think he was involved in serious negotiations. That was clear. There was a round after round. The Iranians clearly took this seriously. What then happened is he came along with that 60-day deadline that nobody noticed because Trump does this. You know, he issues these arbitrary deadlines. He came up with a 60-day deadline that he sent to Khamenei. The only person in the world who actually noticed that 60-day deadline was Netanyahu. And on Thursday of last week, he reminded Trump, oh, you know, this is a 60-day deadline that is expiring today. Tomorrow is day 61. That's it. It's expired. And then at that moment, Trump had signed off on it. Trump then, when he made those unhinged tweets, he did it in response to what apparently was a huge success for Israel. So he quickly wanted to associate himself with that. Yeah, well, I told you. So he is now walking that back. He's now much more wary of what's going on.
But the cat is out of the bag.
What he's saying is if you attack American assets in the region, that's what his recent one is, if you attack American assets, then we are going to come at you. And again,
George,
remember, Marco Rubio was the one who first came out of the gate, and he said, basically, well, all we're concerned about is attacks on American assets. We care about nothing else.
Okay, this is a very...
We don't have any evidence that it's a ruse.
But that's a theory of a case for simpletons, okay? I mean, I don't think anyone believes that at all.
You haven't found... There's no evidence as yet that the ruse theory is entirely coming from Tel Aviv. They're the ones who are saying it was all a ruse. We were in on it together. Not one person from the administration has said, yeah, we were basically...
Okay, well, that shows you how spineless they are, in my opinion.
It's not a ruse. The U.S. military aircraft are refueling Israeli fighters in the skies above Syria. That is an objective fact. You cannot deny that. This is active U.S. military and intelligence assistance. They are facilitating this attack. This has obviously long been planned. Syrian government was removed out of the way to pave the way for open airspace so that Syrian air defense didn't have to. This has been long in the works, and the Trump administration is going through the motions of denial that were first outlined in 2009 RAND Corporation's Which Path to Persia about the ideal mechanism for regime change in Iran, which they highlighted as the U.S. pretended that they were really focused on diplomacy, but Israel would drag them into the conflict against the will. This is occurring according to a decades-long playbook.
Go ahead, George.
How come Trump never once, not once, during the campaign brought this subject up? This was somehow, in terms of the issues he raised during the campaign, he talked about Ukraine, he talked about tariffs, he talked about immigration. This is his biggest crisis yet, and yet not once during the campaign did he say that this is a major priority for him. And indeed, during the early days of the administration, it was never any kind of a priority for him. It only became a priority once Netanyahu started applying pressure against him.
George, newsflash. Politicians lie on campaigns.
Okay, there's no evidence of a lying.
Administration.
Okay,
sure. He lied this administration. He
All right, gentlemen, hang on. Let's move on. Mark, after the events of October 7th and Hezbollah started sending missiles into northern Israel, all the talk was, you know, the strength of the axis of resistance, you know, 100,000 missiles. I mean, very authoritative people that we all respect. We're talking about this, okay? Well, that's gone. Syria is gone. All right, the Houthis are a pest for them. There was no reason to have a campaign against them because it was futile. But, you know, Iran is the last man standing, okay? And, you know, again, it depends on who you want to listen to. I find it very, very depressing, to be honest, about who should I listen to now, okay? Where are we there when it comes to Iran's ability? Because this is existential. This is I cannot see where, oh, you know, the Chinese will come in and have a ceasefire or something. No. This has started and it will end one way or another, Mark.
Yeah, so the axis of resistance has been mauled over the last couple of years. Now, to be fair, the truth is somewhere in the middle. The axis of resistance, Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis are still standing. That alone deserves some...
And they're non-state actors.
They're non-state actors. They're still standing despite Israel going to war with effectively all three of them with U.S. assistance. But their strength has been overinflated. Mossad had crippling decapitation strikes against the leadership of Hezbollah and Hamas, and they're doing the same thing in Iran now. I'm far more worried about Mossad's infiltration of Iranian government, security services, intelligence, and society, their network of mercenaries, assassins, ethnic separatists. They assassinate at will. They have obviously pulled the same Operation Spiderweb with trucks full of drones. It's a massive cyber attack that reportedly took out Iran's air defense in the first hours of the attack. This is intelligence work. I have far more respect for and fear for Mossad's abilities than I do for the Israeli army.
But this reinforces the contention. I mean, you took this all the wind out of my sails, because this isn't a regime change operation. And you know, George, it is quite astounding, the level of infiltration here, because this is not only this, the whole issue about Iran and the bomb is such, it's beside the point. It has really nothing to do with any of what's going on right now. They've always wanted regime change, and they're in the process of doing it. Will they succeed? I have no idea. But one thing I know for sure is that the Iranian revolution will do everything it can to survive this, which means it's going to certainly get very, very ugly. And since we're rapidly running out of time, Iran will definitely try to procure a bomb now. It has no reason not to, George.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, there's no, you know, for the Iran, I mean, this is an unfortunate case that the Ayatollahs are probably not terribly good leaders. I think the Ayatollahs are clerics, they're religious people, they should have been much more alert to the threat that they were facing. You know, I think I agree with Mike, this has been a long time in preparation. They should have been much more ready for this attack. And by ruling out years and years ago, oh, you know, it's against the Quran, you know, to have nuclear weapons, they weaken themselves. You know, you've seen what happens in North Korea. North Korea just went ahead and developed nuclear weapons. No one messed with them. But Iran weakened itself. And given that the Iranian leaders, the Ayatollahs, had seen what happened to Libya, what they'd seen what happened to Iraq, they'd seen what happened to Yugoslavia, none of those had any nuclear weapons. They were attacked. They were destroyed. Iran should have seen this coming. Now, I think it would be irresponsible for any Iranian leadership to forego nuclear weapons. They absolutely need nuclear weapons if they're going to survive. And I don't know whether they're going to survive, but because this is a major onslaught against them. But they absolutely, in order to survive, they will need nuclear weapons.
Okay, well, Mark, will the current government in Iran survive this? Because I don't know if we're at the very, very beginning of something, or we're in the middle of something, or close to an end of something. Anyone that thinks they know, I think, is a fool at this point. Mark.
Okay, so first of all, in defense of the Iranian government, that the Ayatollahs, much less the actual civilian government of Iran, aren't very good leaders. The current leader of the United States, the most powerful country in the world, was the host of The Apprentice and a New York real estate developer of questionable business acumen. Just got to say that there.
Well, Iran is on the brink of collapse. The United States isn't, but go ahead.
That's another argument up for debate for another time.
You got a minute, Mark. You got a minute. Go.
Yeah. So this is a war of long range strikes, a war of attrition of long range strikes right now. Will the Iranian government survive? I believe they will. I believe that while there's a certain element of dissent, unquestionably, with Iranian society, they have actually liberalized a lot more in the last 10 years than people realize. They've lessened that opposition within the country. I think there's too much fantasies of regime change. I think they will survive this. I think that there's going to be possibly political turmoil at the end of this in Israel that Netanyahu may not survive.
Well, okay, I'm marking 15 seconds. What about Trump's legacy? How is this going to be a part of his legacy? 10 seconds.
We're just in the first few months. This is a speed bump on the road to the train wreck that is the Trump
press. All right. A dramatic ending here. I want to thank my guests in Moscow and in Budapest. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.